Good morning. Thank you all for being here to honor my father. At a funeral 2 weeks ago, the eulogist described the deceased as a complicated man. My father was not a complicated man. He was a simple man. He had simple tastes and simple needs. He also was one to let it all hang out. He was not one to hide his feelings or his opinions. He was an Italian charmer and an incurable flirt with the ladies, and I am sure many of you can attest. When healthy, my dad was a hardworking, fun-loving, friendly guy. When sick, like a lot of other human males, you'd think he was dying. Dad was born June the 19th, 1921, and would have been 90 years old this year on June the 19th. He was born in a little town in Sicily called Racamulto, province of Agrigento, near Palermo. When he was 3 years old, he emigrated to New York with his parents, my grandfather, Giovanni, and my grandmother, Antonina. Dad and his family had a hard life. As a young child of about 12 or 13, the family was split up for a couple of years when his parents separated. He and his brother Joe, my uncle, were in an orphanage, and they didn't even know that they were at the same orphanage at the same time for almost 2 years. His other siblings were fostered. None have pleasant memories of those years. When Dad was 16, he had to leave high school 6 months prior to his graduation to get a job to help support his mother and siblings. Though he didn't finish high school, I always thought he was pretty smart, and I always admired his boatloads of common sense. In his working life, Dad called himself a jack of all trades and master of none. He could do everything. Electrical wiring, plumbing, carpentry, work with printing presses, work on cars, fix sewing machines, any machines. He was the best handyman I ever knew. Even recently, though blind and ill, he would offer to fix things for Kathy and me. He was full of ideas on how to improvise. In recent years, we had to keep an eye on him, though. One day, I caught him looking for his bench grinder because he wanted to fix a burr on his dentures. I myself am grateful because I learned a lot about fixing things from watching my dad, and I always took pride in the things that I, a woman, could do. Growing up, Dad was the disciplinarian in the family. My brother and I often heard my mother say, "Wait till your father gets home." It didn't help to try and make ourselves scarce either. Both Mom and Dad were animal lovers, and every one of us children inherited this love. As children, we always had a dog, and at various times, lizards, turtles, cats, parakeets, canaries, mice, hamsters, and even a snake or two. Where animals were concerned, they were very indulgent because they were softies. Our childhood was rough at times due to our poverty. Dad was diagnosed with Addison's disease at age of 30, at a time when there was little known about it and no treatment for it. As a result of the suppression of the immune system from the Addison's, Dad was often very ill and often in the hospital. My brother and I were latchkey children from a very young age, as Mom had to go to work to bring in additional income. My sister Gina came along when I was 9 and my brother 12, so she missed most of the harder times. When my brother was 17, he joined the Marines. Not long after, we moved from the Bronx to Queens, and life was a little bit better there. When I was 20, they moved to Atlanta when I started nursing school here in Baltimore. The air in Atlanta must have been better there because Dad didn't get sick so often anymore. He also found a doctor who put him on a better treatment regimen for his Addison's. My parents bought an acre of land about an hour north of Atlanta, and when Dad retired, they put a double-wide trailer on it and had their own house for the first time since I was five. They loved living there. Dad planted about 100 trees and bushes, built a deck and a tool shed, and to my dismay, frequently went hunting for deer. They had many, many good friends and neighbors in Georgia, and many of them came to help them celebrate their 50th wedding anniversary in 1992. After Mom passed away in 1994, I hoped Dad would move to Baltimore. And though it was hard for him to leave his home, he did move here in 1995. In 1996, I was delighted with Kathy to be able to take him to Italy for the first time since he left the country with his parents. They could have gone before, but my mother was afraid to fly or be on a boat. Part of that trip was in beautiful Sicily, and we passed through Agrigento province and saw the sign for his little village, Racamuto. What a wonderful few days we had with them. I mean, in Palermo, we got to meet seven of our relatives from my grandfather's side of the family, and what a wonderful few days we had with them. It was like we had known them all of our lives, and I only wish we could have gone back. Dad was a conservative Catholic, and I was afraid he wouldn't like coming to St. Vincent's. Happily, he did. And here he became part of our St. Vincent's family as if he had been coming here as long as I had. He became best buddies with my dear Tino, and they did so many things together, like cooking, eating, and making stained glass. Once they traveled together to Canada. They wanted to see Saint-Anne-de-Beaupré. They almost wound up in Montreal instead of Quebec, having gotten on the wrong plane and off at the last possible minute. They never even made it to Saint-Anne-de-Beaupré. After running 10 blocks to get to the bus on time, they were told it didn't run on Saturdays. Though they loved the trip, they never traveled again together unless I was driving. And oh, let's not forget how many girlfriends Dad had here. And at the same time, too. He was filled with Italian charm and, as I said before, quite the flirt. I didn't realize how many lives my dad touched here at St. Vincent's until I began to receive your messages of condolence. I was deeply moved by the comments people made. Here are some. Your dad was always so warm and welcoming whenever I saw him at St. V's. It's been years, but I can clearly see his smiling face. He was always so kind and friendly. He was a welcoming presence at St. V's and will be missed. He was always ready and willing to put a smile on his face. He was a sweet man. He was a kind and gentle friend to a whole host of people and will be sorely missed by all. Your dad was one of the dearest people to help my dad the way he did. What a darling man, always ready and available to give and receive kisses. He was such a great father figure to so many of us at St. V's. I loved your father. He was always so warm and kind to me. And this last one, thank you for sharing your dad with us. He was like everyone's dad. Dad's one wish, all of his life, more like a command, was that we kids never put him in a home. How I dreaded ever having to make that decision, or if I did, that he wouldn't be aware enough to know that he wasn't in his own home. For most of his last week, he didn't know he wasn't in his own home. I also prayed that when his time came, that he wouldn't linger and that he would pass in his sleep. God granted all of these wishes. I firmly believe that Dad is in heaven and completely happy. I envision him looking like he did in his 20s, with my mom and grandparents, aunts and uncles, and all of his family and friends who have gone before, having a big spaghetti and meatball dinner. I know that one day we will all be reunited in God's presence and embrace. Thank you all for your love of my dad and your support for all of us. I love you all, and Dad loved you all too. Thank you.
I knew Charles as a dear friend since 1970. He called me his daughter, and I called him Dad. We both loved to garden, and he would offer to help me, even though his physical abilities limited and prevented him, but he always would offer. He was an Italian who wanted to offer you his great Italian food and hospitality. He'd even go to a store and tell them where his house was. Come on, I'll cook you a spaghetti dinner. Anybody. Charles was very independent, and in spite of his poor vision and hearing, he kept saying, "You know I'm blind." But Terry and I would tease him and say, "Then how come you saw that beautiful one, young blonde over there?" And he always spotted them. And, you know, his vision was kind of like he didn't miss the women. And many women here can attest to that. He would frequently say, "Let's get married." He saw one lady, and just one time, and he asked her to marry him. She said, "When I'm 100, I'll make that decision." And he would kiss the women's hands as he was going about. And I used to take him to Mass over at the villa where all the retired nuns were. Sister Anita, who he knew was there, but many other sisters he had never met. But as he went down the aisle, he took all their hands and he kissed them. And they loved it. He loved the Eucharist. And as you can see from the music and the readings that we chose. And he used to go with me to daily Mass until he started his day program at Stella Maris, and they picked him up at 8 o'clock in the morning, so he couldn't go. But on Saturday we would, and if I had a workshop and couldn't take him, the next day he'd say, "You know, you made me miss Mass." And I was like, "It's not Sunday, it's okay." And every night he said the rosary, and he would sit on the side of the bed while he said it, and he would not lie down, he said, because if I lie down, I might fall asleep before I finish it. Being a nurse, I would frequently be nagging him about following his low cholesterol and diabetic diet. And he would just turn to me and say, "Did I tell you today that I love you?" That's enough. And I believe he did tell me that every day. For him and for his love, I'm most grateful.